Gero Nurses, Tales from the Front is made possible thanks to support from the Center for Education and Research on Aging at the University of the Fraser Valley and the Gerontological Nurses Association of British Columbia.
Welcome to another episode of Gero Nurses, Tales from the Front, featuring retired nurse and dementia researcher Lynn Jackson. Now, here are your hosts, who often wonder if vampire children are ever admonished for running with a wooden stake. This is Shelley Canning and Lillian Hung.
Greetings and thank you for joining us. I'm Lillian Hung, assistant professor at the UBC School of Nursing, the past president of the GNABC. So over to you, Shelley.
Hi, I'm Shelley Canning. I'm an associate professor of nursing at UFV and the director for our Center for Education and Research on Aging. And I am the current president of GNABC.
And this is Gero Nurses, Tales from the Front, where we want to share some of the very inspirational and often innovative and unique stories. And I know today we are going to hear some extraordinary stories and experience of Gero Nurses.
So we are really excited to have Lynn Jackson as our guest for this episode. Lynn is a retired nurse with a lived experience of gerontological nursing care as an older person who lives with dementia. Lynn's also an active researcher in these areas and a strong advocate for person-centered and dementia-friendly care. Lynn graduated from the Royal Jubilee Hospital Program in Victoria in 1977. Where she lived in residence and did her practice in the hospital there. Her nursing career saw her working in surgical pediatric ICU and then later in Emerge, both in Victoria and Toronto. And then she left practice to go into the business side of medicine, eventually living in Mexico City, later Puerto Rico, while she was working for a multinational company that sold various pieces of cardiovascular equipment.
So welcome. I'm really, really excited to have you on the podcast today. Lynn, can you tell us a little bit about what interests you to become a nurse right at the beginning?
Well, that I actually wanted to be a music teacher.
Oh,
yes. I played clarinet, trombone and piano and it got good marks in them. But my parents weren't able to send me to universities. So, and at that time, it wasn't so common that you would work your way, you know, especially being a woman, to work your way through university. So literally, I'm looking in the newspaper, what do I want to be? And I saw lots of ads for nurses. And then I applied and became a nurse. The other thing, too, is that at that time, there was not very many jobs for teachers in Canada, and they were all having to go to the States to get jobs.
Interesting. So did you find it a good fit for you when you started? Did you have any reservations after you actually got working?
No, I did the three-year program living in the hospital with the other nurses in training, and it was the best thing to happen to me. And I did it in Victoria, not that I wanted to be away from home, but I thought it would be good for me to be a little bit away from home and branch out and be on my own. And the rest is history. I made such good friends in nurses training that are still friends to today, and I never look back.
Good. I'm interested, Lynn, in what the approach was that you were taught in terms of the nurse-patient relationship, because now when we think about best practices, we think about taking a person-centered approach or a dementia-friendly approach, but what was it like in 1977? What kind of direction did you get there?
I don't think we had any direction, nothing formal, especially with dementia, because I remember working as a student on geriatric wards and people with dementia, but we weren't taught anything and they weren't given any formal diagnoses. They were, they had dementia. That was it. Just broad term.
So things have changed, maybe not enough, but they're definitely changing. And some of those changes you've seen through your work with the Alzheimer's Society. I know Lillian was talking about some of the work you've done there. Maybe if you could share a little bit about how you got connected and some of that work.
Okay, well, the story, when I was diagnosed, I went to the Alzheimer's Society because I thought it would be good for me to join a support group. But they didn't have any support groups at the time, and they told me to come back in 6 months. Came back in 6 months, they said, come back in the spring. Well, during that time, I was on the internet, and I met a group of people who were in a chat room called Coping with Personal Memory Loss. And it was a Yahoo group at the time. And in that group, there were nine of us who were formally diagnosed. So we branched off and formed our own group called Dementia Advocacy and Support Network International, or DASNY for short. And in that group, we had a chat room that the Fisher Foundation in New York somehow donated to us. I guess a connection with one of the people in our group. We met in that chat room twice a day. And we had an email community, and we were able to have people like from Australia were there, the States and Canada. So we branched out on our own, but within that group, we decided that, you know, that in our own communities around the world, there were no support groups. So we thought, you know, there's no use messing around with our local associations. We've got to go right to the top. And that's what we did. So 13 of us met in Montana in 2001, the summer of 2001. And we wrote a proposal to Alzheimer's Disease International stating that here we are, people diagnosed with dementia. We're probably not the only ones around the world. We need help. We need support groups. And so we wrote the proposal, and one of the people in that summit was going to London on her way home to Australia. So she took the proposal personally to Alzheimer's Disease International. They listened, and that year at their conference in Christchurch, New Zealand, they invited us to come, and one of us was the keynote speakers, and other of us gave workshops. And every year since then, Alzheimer's Disease International has had people with dementia involved in their conferences. And that year, even though we all lived far apart from each other, we, over the internet, made ideas, so we came up with a booth. And so we had a booth in Christchurch, New Zealand, and it was a hit of the conference. I mean, people were just buzzing around us. They couldn't believe that we were walking and talking with a diagnosis of dementia, and let alone having a booth and giving talks, presentations. It was really something. So DASNY continued on for quite a few years. I don't know if you know the book Still Alice, written by Lisa Genova.
Yeah,
well, Lisa Genova started coming to our chat room, and we sort of had a policy that it was only for people with dementia, but she said, I really would like to write a book about what it's like to be diagnosed with dementia. So she wrote the book, and the rest is history. Then there was the movie, and that was a really good thing that came out of our group.
So wow, amazing! So it sounds like, you know, you really like pioneer and took the leadership about like shaping the how people with dementia should be seen. And also you had a like that friendship that you grew among those group of people. Can you tell us a little bit more about like the journey and the process about how you, like some of the stories that you mentioned about, you know, going to traveling and doing some advocacy work and leadership?
Luckily, I was, I had to go to a long-term disability, but luckily I had the means to be able to go to the Alzheimer's Disease International Conference every year. And every year, the same core group of us and more each year would meet up around the world, wherever it was. And, you know, it was really neat to see that we were still doing well. And actually, some of us are still doing very well. The ones that aren't are the ones that were quite elderly 22 years ago. So, you know, naturally that they didn't do so well. But what would happen was, you know, we would be at the conferences doing our presentations and meeting people. And it was really, we knew it was good for us to be out there and making the effort to advocate and help people with dementia. You know, what was really neat was every year we would continue having a booth. And
right.
Alzheimer's societies from other countries would come to our booth and say, how do you start a support group? And we'd say, well, you know, you just need to start with two or three people and a facilitator and some cookies and coffee or tea is good. And they'd go back to their country the next year. They'd come back and said, oh, we started a support group and the people are so happy. And this would happen year after year with different countries. And it really was heartwarming for me. You know, I was an emergency room nurse. I've helped save a lot of lives in my career, but I think I've helped an awful lot more lives with the advocacy work that I've done with dementia. And I must say that shortly after forming DASNY, my local Alzheimer's Society in Vancouver did have a facilitator and would start a support group, and it's continued on till this day. That support group, I go every time, or I went for years and years and years until COVID, I just see the people, how much they are flourishing and how much they're helped just by knowing that they're being with other people who are diagnosed with the same disease as them, and they can ask the questions, they can come up with solutions and to their, you know, their little little problems that happen from day to day
because they're shared problems, right? Because everybody can understand the
and you mentioned about helping people, and like nursing is always about like helping patients and helping our residents and helping. So through your advocacy work or the leadership work or your friendship, like helping people around you, and it seems like it's really, really rewarding. And I'm also thinking about the research work that you have been doing. It's also it's about helping people. Is that right? Because this is not. Yeah. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how did you get in research and why do you want to do research?
The first researcher that approached us as DASNY as a group was MARIP at the University of Waterloo. They wanted to have a one-day conference for people with dementia, and that happened. And they involved people with dementia to help design the program and decide who would be speaking. And we actually made a toolkit. So that was the first researcher that I was involved with. So and then I got involved with the UBC. Deb O'Connor was doing some. I have to admit, I can't remember exactly what they were at the time, but I found them very rewarding. And, you know, I'm into other ones now that I find equally rewarding. Yeah.
Lynn is on a research team that I'm leading now. So I'm absolutely delighted to get to know her better. And those strengths that you have around advocacy are really going to be important.
Thank you.
I remember when I was studying my master, and I was looking at those two kids that you made. It really inspired me. Those two kids, it got like graphics, and it was so useful. And it really, I think that influenced me to think about the voice, the direct voice of the person with lived experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the impact about the work that you did was like amazing.
Well, I think that's it because, you know, I don't come from a, you know, university background. So for me, it's the idea of contributing what I can from my perspective as a person diagnosed. And that's really good.
So Lynn, I'm also thinking about sort of Lillian alluded to this earlier, but this idea of what it means that you're a nurse. So how being a nurse it has influenced either, you know, was that a really a part of what led you to form that first support group? And is it something about your nursing nature that drives you to be part of a research team? Like, do you feel like the nurse part is still central?
Oh, I think most definitely, yes. I think that, you know, as nurses, we have that caring attitude, and that's why I wanted to get the support group underway, because I knew it would help people. And with the research also, it's going to, the projects ultimately help people, and that's what I wanted to be involved with. And it feels good to be involved with that sort of thing. I think it's a win-win situation because I feel good, and then the researchers benefit also because they're able to have better understanding of what of the people with dementia and what they're studying.
Lots of the work that you've done has been around areas of dementia friendliness or person-centeredness, and I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about what you think directions maybe that we need to go in, well, for one, in nursing education. How do we do better? Because I'm convinced we can, but we're not there yet. So how do we do better with our nursing education? What do we need to do?
Well, I think one of the biggest and probably most important study or research projects I've been involved with, ultimately we came up with a toolkit for flipping the stigma that goes along with dementia. It's flippingstigma.ca, and it is really a good resource to help people to understand what the stigma with dementia is and how to treat people with dementia. It's got a lot of people talking. I think that it gives the personal side to it, which is always helpful when teaching. We have to get rid of the stigma that surrounds dementia, and because people are afraid of it, and even medical people, even though that I think they don't want to admit it, but they some of them are, you know. So yeah. We have to be able to talk about it.
Yeah, I know that you work with now you work with a lot of students. So how do you find your experience about like teaching them or working with them? And they might not feel comfortable, or they might not know how to interact with you in the beginning. They might have assumptions. I wonder if you can share a little bit about like working with students.
Well, yes, I think me and the other people diagnosed with dementia that are involved in these studies, I think we're quite open about our diagnosis, of course, and we've come to terms with it, which has taken a long time for a lot of us. But once we're there, it's easier to talk to people and to teach and to be able to let people know how we feel like students, and if they have questions, and we're always open to answering and teaching, and I think that helps.
Wanted to thank her for her generosity. Like, that is so generous and kind, that the kindness, like, to be able to like share and let the student learn from you. Because I remember that I was very concerned about, you know, sometimes when you talk about your life experience, I was worrying about that, will about the trauma that you had, like talking about the past. And we talked about that before. And you said something was very helpful for me, that you said that if you knew that the story that you shared could help people, and that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Because I would go to these different conferences and be asked to speak, and I was out there talking, and but then after I'd give my presentation, I'd go back to my room, and I'd just be, oh, did I really, you know, tell people that I have dementia, and do I really have dementia? And and then come down to earth and ground yourself. Yes, you've got that diagnosis, and you've helped these people, and just continue on. Yeah.
So I think in a way, in doing all of that, you help the rest of us come to terms with dementia too, and our role as nurses or physicians or anybody really. And so then I'm kind of flipping it in my mind and thinking, what can we do to help the person come to terms with their own diagnosis? Is there a way of being with them that would help?
Mm-hmm. I think that what would help is, you know, not to be afraid and to be able to talk to the person. I think you have to have like compassionate curiosity. And you know, it's not something that you can do and it's going to happen, because it's like death and dying. There's the different stages, and you go back and forth, and then finally there's some form of acceptance at the end. It's a process, but just to be there for the person and listen and help, not to be overbearing, just, you know, make sure that they know that you're there if the person needs help. I always believe that if a person is treated as if they're ill, they'll act as if they're ill. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I've done so well, because I had to come home back to Vancouver. My parents my parents were able to make sure that I still had my autonomy, and only helped me when I needed help. And so I had to figure things out myself a lot of the time, and sometimes it was hard, but you know, I think it's good that they didn't baby me and treat me like I was ill.
Right. That's the nurse in you talking, I think, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I ask you that, the biggest practical tip that you would give to a young new nurse that who is coming to the geriatric nursing, the geriatric nursing, and what would be the tip that you would give to that nurse?
I think that, like what I said about be with that person, don't be afraid of them, and just maybe the person doesn't want to talk, but they're there, and just let them know that you're there for them. And you know, if they want to talk, have a compassionate curiosity.
I love that word, compassionate curiosity.
Yeah.
Like being there with that person.
I'm going to put that in my my course in January, Lynn. I'm talking about it.
Well, I learned it when I was doing a flipping stigma session to a group of seniors. And actually, they were volunteers for a seniors center, Kitsilano. And somebody in my table told me that. And I asked her if I could keep it. I think it's used with psych a lot. I don't know, but that's what I'm told.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Like the compassion and curiosity is not just being curious about everything, but you have that curiosity with compassion. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, Lynn. So thank you so much for joining us to chat about your experience as a general nurse.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. It was really great. And we would like to thank everyone for taking the time to listen. And if you can think of someone who we should chat with on an upcoming episode of Gero Nurses, please email us at lillian.hung@ubc.ca or shelley.canning@ufv.ca.
So until our next episode, we hope you all stay safe and stay healthy. And remember, laughter isn't the best medicine. Medicine is. So talk to you again soon.
And that's the show.